Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
Welcome back. Ben doesn't know that I was about to start the show. He's having a tea. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Ben Gracewood, T-Man.
T-Man, T-Bagger.
T-Chaiwala.
Is Ryan actually here, or is he pretending not to
be here? I am here. I'm green tea guy today.
Ryan Sproul, green tea. Everyone's a green tea guy except me.
I'm
a big glass tumbler of wine guy because why not? Someone's got to keep up appearances. We've got a reputation to uphold, you assholes.
It is a bit lame, isn't it? Green tea, anyone? Just a quick green tea.
It's not lame, it's fucking awesome. Shut up.
Compared to a monster? No. No. So we've got an interview to play. When should we do that? Let's talk about what's going on this week. Anything big?
Big this week?
I'll tell you what, something that's happened. I'll start everyone off because I did start this a little bit before probably everyone was ready. I thought I wasn't going to be into this, but I'm so into this. Something that's happened just today, just now, is the New Zealand International Film Festival have released their list of films. Now, they'd teased a few, like Taxi Driver and the full Metropolis, like the restored print.
A restored print of Taxi Driver.
Ooh, that's right, which, of course, I've never seen on the big screen.
Retelly scene or whatever it is, yeah.
When would you have an opportunity to see it on the big screen?
Never.
Never? Not after the 1970s?
Is it? Next week?
I don't know exactly what all the dates are. I could probably find those. No, it doesn't list the dates in this article I'm looking at. There are a whole lot of... it's only just been released when we're recording, so we haven't had a chance to really digest it. There's a few I would probably suggest. The POM Wonderful Presents The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, which is Morgan Spurlock's latest documentary.
I've heard great things about that.
Funded entirely by product placement.
The Planet Money did a full podcast on it about the difficulties of product placement and how... He wasn't giving people editorial control, but they could tell him what they wanted, how they wanted their product represented.
Right.
Because it's product placement.
Yeah. And that seems fair.
Yeah.
I mean, and McDonald's probably would have paid for his Super Size Me.
You think?
If they were sensible, they would. That was massive. How many people stopped eating McDonald's because of that? And how many people felt like a Big Mac? Probably a few people didn't have one for a week and then they went and had a binge. Not me, though. I haven't had McDonald's in a long, long time. So that's one that I'd put on my list of things that I'm quite keen about. I don't know about The Tree of Life. Do you know anything about The Tree of Life?
The listeners may not know about The Greatest Movie Ever Sold.
Yep.
But it's basically a movie that is funded entirely through product placement in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And part of the movie is going around and sorting out that product placement and talking about what product placement is and how it works and so on. Yep. Mm. And there are some amazing... Once you become sensitive to product placement, you're in trouble.
Yep.
So if you watch the movie I, Robot with Will Smith, the Converse All-Stars.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Or
or the Audis.
There's another Will Smith film, which is Enemy of the State, where they do this big scene where they're looking at Will Smith's character through cameras and working out what clothes he's got so that they can bug his shit. So they're like, what kind of pen is that? It's a Parker pen. And like, all right, get a Parker pen, bug out. What kind of watch is that? Well, that's a Rolex. Okay, get the Rolex, bug out.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. I love it. I love product placement when it's handled well.
Have you seen the cool shit product placement where they can, when they do reruns, they can rephase in new products?
Sounds unlikely.
They
sounds like it costs more than it's worth.
In different labels on the boxes and stuff.
And now I believe that if they set it up to begin with to do that, if they do it after the case,
key it to start with,
they'd need a green box or whatever.
Yeah. I completely believe that. Another movie that I'm that Ryan, actually, you are probably quite keen to see as well, is The Trip.
Oh, right. Yeah.
With Steve Coogan and Rob Braden.
Is it a movie?
I've already seen it, basically, haven't I?
Yeah, well, I've seen extracts on YouTube. But was that the whole thing?
There were six episodes.
I've seen the whole movie, the whole episodes, yeah.
Oh, well, then I've probably seen the whole thing. I'm not going to go and see that.
I recommend the movie to anybody who's considering going to see it.
Another one that people probably haven't heard about is Elite Squad, The Enemy Within, which is a Brazilian action movie. And it is Brazil's all-time biggest box office hit. It's about a military police unit. And from what I've heard about it, I've seen a trailer for it, which was incomprehensible to me because they were speaking Portuguese. But it looked really friggin' cool. Like French rap, right? I mean, they might be saying the same stupid, cheesy, goofy, look at me, I've got a big dick stuff that American rappers say. But they're saying it with such a cool accent.
Yes. Love it.
Has anyone else actually looked at any of these?
No.
No? All right. Well, there's a Chow Yun-Fat movie called Let the Bullets Fly, which I'm quite keen to see because I haven't seen any Chow Fat in a long time. Have I gone too long in this in talking about this yet? Oh, and of course, Metropolis.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And I don't know if this Metropolis includes...
I watched about half.
Oh, it does. It does include the bit that they found, I think, in South America. They found another 25 minutes that hasn't been seen in like 70 years or 80 years or something. And they found it in, I don't know, Brazil or Paraguay.
I watched half of Metropolis once and I just, you know...
That's a classic.
It is a classic, but
it's hard to understand the stuff with like dudes operating the big clock machine thing, dials and so on, but... Okay, well, I mean, not everyone's going to be into all of them. One that you probably will like is one that I'm sure I'll find one that I think you'll like any second now.
Let's go and see the film festival.
Space Battleship Yamato.
I watched that on the plane back from Japan. Brilliant.
Oh, fine. Okay.
Great movie.
Well, but on the big screen.
Yeah.
Such a different experience.
Yeah.
Just as a technical question.
Yep.
Sorry, the reason I was typing is because Dylan just sent me a message saying, I'm so lonely. And I said, tell Morgan. And he says, I did. And he's gone offline to me.
I did not.
Yeah, Morgan.
Oh, well, he's offline to me. Oh, there's a movie that everyone's heard about. Everyone wants to see, I'm sure. Hobo with a Shotgun.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard about it. No.
Well,
you haven't heard about it?
No.
Who's that? Rutger Hauer, I think?
Oh,
who becomes a shotgun-wielding vigilante? And just kind of travels around doing grindhouse style, blow people's heads and legs off and so on, taking down all the criminals. Out. You know, once you've got a shotgun, you can do whatever you like, apparently. I didn't know that was the case, but, you know, turns out it might be true.
Any good docos?
Oh, heaps. And let me get into them. Big. It's a big list that I'm going through here, you understand.
A lot of things.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which I'm actually quite keen to see. It's about an 85-year-old sushi legend. It's obviously it's, you know, about food.
Mm.
Food and this man. I don't know the details about it, but Senna. You have to watch the movie to see it.
Senna, I've heard really good things about Senna, even if you're not a motor racing fan, I've heard it's excellent.
Yeah. Oh, we've found our way to the sports section, which amuses me because you want to talk about Senna, which is Ayrton Senna, Brazilian. Yeah. Wow, Brazil in South America seems to be coming up quite a lot this episode. What's going on?
Yeah, fame. Well, best Formula One driver of his day. Yeah. Died too young.
Rated pretty highly. Also in the sports section is Bobby Fischer against the world. Rockstar chess player. Apparently it's sport.
Wow.
Who knew? I'm really keen to see that because, dude, Bobby Fischer was incredible. Like, he became the American champion at the age of, like, 15.
Really?
Yeah, he beat all comers. And then he went on to, like, the Russians... viewed their intellectual superiority to be demonstrated by the power of their chess.
Yeah.
No, this was long before. This was 1972, I think, when he beat the Russians finally. But he beat just everyone in the world, and he started from an incredibly young age. But he basically lost his mind, became a political outsider, and but he was. He was essentially on his own. I've seen footage from. One of those American TV shows where you have to guess who the person is. I think it was called I've Got a Secret.
Right.
And his secret was that he's the best chess player. And they gave him the tickets to go to Russia as a 15-year-old. I mean, he had no support to take on the entire world. Whereas the Russians, of course, because they were trying to express their intellectual superiority to the world.
State-sponsored?
Absolutely state-sponsored. And, you know, coaches and training teams and, you know, the way they did gymnastics and the way they did everything else. And probably they invented lots of really cool drugs and so on.
Just so go to the film festival. Go to what's the site?
NZFF? Well, this is on flex.co.nz, list. I think this is probably the most accessible list if you just want to have a quick browse. Mm-hmm. But nzff.co.nz.
Actually, from each according to his queens, I've almost got a joke out of that.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear it.
From each according to his queens, to each according to his. No, there's nothing else. Nothing else in chess. Just about had communist chess sorted out, but no. Sorry, guys, that was a real downer.
It was a good try, actually. I do think. Yeah. If anyone knows what you're talking about.
To each according to his needs.
Yeah,
manifesto. But I don't know what that's going to be. Rooks.
No.
Doesn't really sound right.
Other exciting stuff this week.
Lots. There's so much exciting stuff.
Nokia announced a new phone this week.
We are not up to that.
But it's, that happened this
all
week.
All right, we're cracking on to the news.
No, no, what else happened this week then, Morgan?
Things that are happening tonight. If you're listening to this on the day that the episode came out, last week we spoke about a comedy gig in support of the, big sleep out. Let me bring up Discourse to get the details. Jokes for Change, which is at the Classic Comedy Bar. Tonight, starting at 7:30, it's $40.
Tonight being Thursday the 20...
Thursday the something, yeah, maybe.
23rd,
maybe. It might have sold out, but it might not have. So you should go along, because you'll have a laugh. You'll get some cells thrown in as part of the deal. I don't even know. Maybe they'll have a drink as well. But maybe cells. You're pushing your... Cells? New York pizza?
Oh, cells.
Right. Cells? Are you, like, not a New Zealander or something, Ben? Is that what you're telling me?
I think he sells, like, you know, original comic artwork or something like that.
Huh.
What?
Yeah. Could have been something like that. All right. Let's get on with the show. So we've got an interview. When do we want to play that?
Well, we should probably lead into it with some kind of explanation of what it is.
You want to play an excerpt? Okay, I'll play an excerpt.
Let's play an excerpt.
I'll find an excerpt. I think just maybe dictating areas where you can sell certain kinds of alcohol. So if the central city is only, maybe it's a champagne-only zone, that'd solve a big problem, wouldn't it?
People would just switch from the other alcohol to champagne.
Yeah, obviously. What a delusional motherfucker I turned out to be. That is Liz Shaw, who is a candidate for Auckland Central in this year's general election.
Is she running for a party?
She's running as an independent. David Farrar has actually described her, I think, as an interesting young gnat in the past.
That was long before he had any idea.
Well, but that's how she's been described in the past.
Yes,
but
she was a member of the Young Nats, yeah.
So we talk about... now, she's also a bit notorious amongst some sectors because she's had quite a bit of negative press in the past.
She's been in student politics. The name rings a bell.
Student politics, no, but student notoriety, yes.
Maybe that's where I
name. Actually, Ryan can probably talk about it because I think during your tenure as editor of Auckland University Student Association magazine, Crack'em, I think was that when she was active?
No, she was certainly active around then, but it was the year before when she was most prolific. I banned all mention of her from the magazine in 2006 in a massive act of censorship.
Yeah.
But she was well known around the university as that girl. As soon as a few descriptive words were used, somebody would say, "Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about."
Yeah.
Does she have a platform, Morgan, that she described to you?
Well, no, hang on. You need to have some idea of what she's done, Ben. Do you really not know who she is?
I know the name. And I do remember her name from when I was at university, but that's really...
All right. The first thing is that in 2005, Steve Crowe snuck an ad past Crack'em and got it published
porn
in Crack'em.
Porn King Steve Crowe.
Yes.
Steve Crowe, porn king or entrepreneur or former Auckland mayor candidate, Steve Crowe. He put an ad into Crack'em for an A-plus model search, looking for vibrant young models who are outgoing and have great personalities and would like to have $10,000 taken off their student loan. And it turned out that this was actually a search for a girl to star in a pornographic film. Now, so far as I know, only one person answered that call for porno stars, and Liz Shaw was it. And she went along, wasn't in a film, but she did a pornographic photo shoot. She wrote about it for the magazine, which was published in 2005. And the pictures got onto the internet very quickly and spread quickly to her notoriety. Now, a little bit later, say, I think 2 years later, she turned up again in the media as an extra on Shortland Street who, after filming, for a day or whatever on the set, immediately went home, jumped online, and gave away plot details of stuff that was going to happen sort of 3 months in advance of where the story was at, and ruining a whole bunch of work that South Pacific had put into hyping some big love triangle at the time. So she got banned from, you know, basically anything to do with South Pacific Pictures or ever likely to get an extra job again. And then she was also, she tried out for New Zealand Idol. Now, do you have that clip, Morgan?
Now, I've heard a little rumour that you're after the Big D's job. You think Dom has to go.
I do think Dom has to go.
So what have you got to offer in terms of being a presenter? What could you give us?
Hello? No, bubbly personality, outgoing.
Can you sing?
You're the judge.
I'll carry on.
Crash and burn, all the stars explode tonight. How'd you get so desperate? How'd you stay alive?
What is this song? Crash and burn.
Help me, please.
Help.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Liz. That's not really singing by any description that I've...
I could do it again.
No. It's not really happening. Maybe you need to concentrate on your presenting career.
I'm not judging you on your presenting skills. I'm judging you on your singing skills. So it's no for me.
All that, well, the talent-free zone. There is no talent there for singing or for presenting. I don't know what you think you're going to do with your life, but no.
You're saying I can't be a presenter?
I don't think you'd be a presenter or even a singer.
Why do you say that?
I don't think you've got the chops.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I do think even your dress sense indicates to me that you couldn't be a presenter. Have you ever seen a presenter on TV like that?
No, because...
No. So, you know...
What about what you're wearing? Black? Hello?
No, 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 no.
Everybody wears black. And don't get me started on that shiny patch on your head.
As well. Thanks for wasting our time and yours.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. I had fun. F*** you.
Thank you.
Discourse.
Classic.
When I actually aired, the camera followed her out of the building as she was just swearing and screaming all the way down the stairs.
Okay, so good good grounding for a career as a politician.
Right, and now she's decided she's going to run for Auckland Central. Now, not as a young Nat, but as an independent, because in her words, she can't find any other party that she agrees with 100%, and so she, to represent her views, she will represent herself. And I think that she's got some balls to be doing that. And Morgan interviewed her.
I interviewed her. I think you'll probably find that she's moved on quite a bit since then. That's 6 years old.
Mm.
The on-screen graphics said that she was 19. I think that's not true. I think she's probably a little bit older than that at the time.
Well, if I think about the way I was acting 6 years ago, God, I'd hate to be held accountable.
Yeah. And coming up now, we will just play an excerpt from that interview. Here we go.
You're listening to Discourse.
Described on Scoop as a sassy new candidate for Auckland Central, Liz, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, Morgan.
So what led to the decision to stand for Parliament this year? Have you got a history in politics, and are you another one of these bloody lawyer-turned politicians?
No, not at all. Ever since I was a child, I've had an interest in politics. I've always had opinions, and I've always had an interest. And I was going to stand in 2005, but I decided it wasn't the right time, that I didn't have enough life experience.
Yeah.
I just came back to New Zealand from Australia, where I saw the public transport system, which was amazing in comparison to Auckland. And I saw the issue of homelessness. And it really drove that desire to stand up and do something about it.
Right. We're interested in both those subjects, homelessness and transport, on Discourse. Let's drill down into both those subjects, starting with the homelessness.
When I was in Sydney, I did see quite a few homeless people. So I had an extensive conversation with one homeless man at a train station. And it wasn't just that he'd given up on himself. It was that other people had given up on him. And so it was this vicious cycle. He lost his mum to suicide when he was 13. He was the one who found her. He had nobody and he didn't know how to pick himself up. Auckland City Council, before it became the super city, was going to spend $135,000 over a 3-year period. I don't know about you, but that's definitely not enough money. That doesn't even pay for more social workers. Social workers are where we need to start.
I saw one thing you mentioned on your Facebook campaign page, restricting access to alcohol in the central city.
Absolutely. Obviously, alcohol has been an issue that's been widely publicised in the media recently. I have noticed homeless people drinking on the streets. I don't think they should be moved on, but I certainly think they should be discouraged from drinking. So I would like to see fewer liquor stores available and the accessibility reduced.
You mentioned that the number of liquor outlets in the city. A problem I've got with them is that they're all rubbish. They're all those kind of sterile, fluorescent lit, you know, low quality RTD style liquor stores.
Well, it's all to do with money and what's affordable, and the cheaper alcohol is, you know, more affordable.
I think just maybe dictating areas where you can sell certain kinds of alcohol. So if the central city is only, maybe it's a champagne-only zone, that'd solve a big problem, wouldn't it?
People would just switch from the other alcohol to champagne. That completely misses the point. That absolutely misses the point. The point is to reduce the incentive to drink and reduce the accessibility, to reduce the binge drinking culture. And obviously it's not just price that comes into it. It's also social constructs and discourses. So I think advertising campaigns such as the ones that were on TV in New Zealand a couple of years ago also need to be increased again.
And, I don't think TV campaigns are very good for homeless people.
Discourse.
Let's get on to public transport, which is a big topic of conversation on Discourse. So now what problems do you see with public transport in Auckland, and what propose?
Oh my God, where to begin?
Well, low-hanging fruit maybe.
Buses don't run on time, buses are late, bus drivers don't stop, buses don't run late enough, the hours aren't long enough, the frequency, the sizing on the Northern Express, for example, the size of the bus. A lot of people have to stand in the morning. The bus should be every 5 minutes, not every 10 minutes, particularly if you're travelling from Britomart through to Albany. Mission Bay lacks a service. There's not a train system that goes to the North Shore. There isn't cycling available on the Harbour Bridge. There isn't an airport link. I also think the cost of public transport in Auckland is way too high. In Australia, you can get a day pass, which is a week pass. And that gives you unlimited travel. In Auckland, it's at least double that. I think it's good that Auckland has brought in electronic ticketing, but I don't think they've implemented it well.
Discourse.
Are you a bridge or a tunnel girl?
I don't think it's practical to build a new bridge. What I'd like to see is Akaranga Station, which is on the North Shore near the AUT University campus, has a big new bus system, which goes on to the Northern Express. I would like to see a new bridge go across from downtown Auckland through to Akaranga. So it'd be bridge over water and then a tunnel right through to Albany, and especially with the growth and development happening in Albany, I think that's essential.
Discourse.
Moving on to kind of the broader picture, to me Auckland Central seems like a really tough fight to get into. I mean, do you have some kind of genius electioneering strategy that will help you defeat the electioneering power of Labour and National? I mean, I'm quite impressed that you've already got, you know, approaching a 1,000 people on your Facebook campaign page, but...
Yeah, if the election was based on Facebook likes, well, I've won, but unfortunately it's not. It's based on the ballot on the 26th of November.
Yeah.
My election strategy is something I'm keeping very close to my chest. I am going to have a pretty tough fight up against me, but I plan to run every election. So I think it's a long-term strategy, and I don't think you can realistically expect to win the first time.
Yeah.
But it's something I'm committed to.
So it's building profile this time, realistically?
That's correct.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners today?
Vote
for you. That's the first thing, right?
I would actually say vote for the person who you think will best represent you.
Right.
Vote for the person who you think will really engage you and really focus on the democratic process.
Yeah.
Focus on the person who you think will stand up and actually fight for what they believe in. Vote for honesty.
Mm.
Vote for realism. Vote for the homeless, basically. Vote for those who can't actually vote. Vote for those who can't speak up. Vote for the minority groups who don't get their say. So, in other words, vote for Liz Shaw.
That's excellent. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks.
You're listening to Discourse.
So just to sum up that at the end there, vote for homeless minorities, vote for Liz Shaw. Because she's an employed white person.
Okay, look, Morgan's been saying off air that he wants to give Liz a fair hearing because she's come on and she's talked to us. But fuck that. Sorry. She's got a shady background of dodgy behaviour and I get nothing out of that interview at all that's inspiring. And she just seems to be seeking attention as far as I'm concerned.
But she had the balls to front up. And she wasn't as mad as I expected.
No.
But anyone could have the balls to say, I'm going to run for politics. She's got no chance of winning. And
I don't think that I would put myself in that kind of spotlight of a sort of attention. And I suppose, but then, you know, you're suggesting that attention is what she's into. And therefore, it's not really, you know, having the balls to get all the attention because it's actually what she's into, what she craves.
I can't help but wonder, like, if she is, I wish it'd been. It would have been interesting to ask if she regretted some of the things she'd done in the past, because they are going to haunt her if she continues further into the election cycle.
Like, she's been asked that many times, of course.
Has she? I mean, I haven't seen anything current about that. I know she did a 2020 interview after the.
She did a press release about it, man. Did you read a press release? She's via press release, which is great. She's issuing press releases that are sort of her own personal musings about herself. And
yes, I just think, don't give her the airtime. We should see if we can actually talk to Nikki Kaye and Jacinda Ardern, who are valid political choices, and see what their platform
is. But neither Nikki Kaye nor Jacinda Ardern will have the genius idea of bridging over the harbour and then and then tunnelling to Albany. Because that's the sane way to do it.
They might jump on her coattails.
Hang on, let me.
They definitely won't suggest that. Oh, actually, and let me just say, for listeners at home, while we were listening to that interview, Dylan joined us. So that's the other voice who you're hearing.
That mysterious, spooky voice.
Dylan Reeve from, I don't know, what do we call you? Dylan Reeve, TV maker, whatever.
Editor of.
No, I don't. They'll do. Can we say that?
All right. Here's the part of her second press release that I wanted to read. Questions are being thrown at Liz Shaw. Like, so let's say hypothetically you get elected. You are an instant role model for young kids in your community. What are you going to say to them when they find out you were posed in sexually explicit pictures in NZX Mag to pay off your student loan? People have suggested that if successful in her quest for the seat of Auckland Central, she would be a role model towards children and other young people and question whether this is consistent with her past actions. Minister of Social Development Paula Bennett was previously on the DPB, and that didn't hold her back. Junkie's father died when he was 6, and that didn't hold him back. He's now the Prime Minister of New Zealand. So what I get from that is, yeah, I did some porn. Look at that guy. His dad died when he was 6. Eh? He's doing all right.
You know what? Honestly, I think that doing porn, I don't think that should be held against someone. And in fact, I would go even further. And I would say, I don't trust any of the politicians. And I wonder if it's because I haven't seen their assholes.
No, is this your asshole theory of most trusted politician?
If you've seen someone's asshole, you know a lot about them.
Have you seen Professor Sir Peter Buckman's asshole?
I see what you're trying to segue to, but I don't want to let you do it just yet. Because I just want to say, we've just played an excerpt of the interview on the show, an excerpt that doesn't actually exist. We listened to the full thing here in the studio. Mm-hmm. On the full version, she just, you know, talks at more detail about stuff. So if you're really into it, you know.
There'll be an extra show.
That'll be on.
Special on there. Yeah.
Link on the website.
Discourse.co.nz.
A few things to say about what was probably in the excerpt.
I think her Facebook page offers much more interesting insights into what she's about, because that's where the slightly more nuttiness is.
I've heard that there's a married couple called Jake and Beth who've been having problems with with spousal abuse and alcohol, substance abuse, and incarceration. And I'd really like to hear what she has to say about the problems that they're having with their relationship.
Well, apparently she has solved the with her social welfare policies. She's been posed and has provided her answers to the characters and plots of Once Were Warriors, Outrageous Fortune, and Lady and the Tramp.
But of course, she didn't know that that was what she was doing.
No, she had no idea. she was very, very shocked to hear about Jake's treatment of Beth.
I imagine. And he's always demanding eggs, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So like I said, I don't really want to be too hard on her. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt at having, making an effort to not be just an attention seeker, and not understanding the difference between good and bad attention. But I don't think that she's gonna get an easy time here on Discourse, unfortunately. You guys are mean.
I think she does want to change some things. I think that she would not be doing it if she didn't actually care about some of the things that she's talking about, regardless of the additional bonus of getting attention, which may be what she wants as well.
I think that's sort of came over to me as well. She cares about this stuff, although I don't think she, even with a degree in politics, I don't think she has a good understanding of it. Like, all her policies involve huge expenditure. And yet she wants to introduce a low, flat tax.
I'm going to go back to assuming that she is a genius performance artist of the style of Sacha Baron Cohen and is subtly taking the piss out of all of us right now.
God, but I can't wait for the reveal. There's
a very amazing angle on this, which I berate politicians for being completely disconnected and completely 100% soundbite wonkers. Mm-hmm. Like John Key talking about... last week, talking about which suburbs in Christchurch were going to be, gotten rid of, and he was asked the direct question, saying, "Will these homeowners get their equity back?" And instead of saying, "Well, yes, that's what we're going to try and do," he said, "Oh, it's all under discussion at the moment," which is how would that make people feel? Anyway, so completely talking in roundabout circles, whereas maybe someone like Liz Shaw and more people should run for politics who are going to be more direct. I don't know.
So speaking of having seen someone's asshole, that nice Mr. Key, the New Zealand Herald have released the New Zealand's most trusted list.
It was done by a magazine, wasn't it?
Oh, is it not Digest. The New Zealand Herald? Oh, it's Reader's Digest. Why would we talk about the Reader's Digest? Well, because it's interesting to New Zealanders. That nice Mr. Key was 70th on the list of most trusted last year. What position do you think he's moved up to this year?
Most trusted.
69th.
90th.
Just above.
You sit up. You cheated.
Paul Holmes and Paul Henry.
I haven't seen the entire list. I've only got an excerpt of the top 32.
Phil Goffers?
Extremely good news is that in previous years, the top placing has tended to go to sports people. But this year, the top placing goes to a scientist, Sir Ray Avery, New Zealander of the Year in 2010. He's a scientist and inventor. Yeah, which is great news. It's not a bloody All Black. Second place is Sir Peter Gluckman, whose arsehole I haven't seen. He's the chief science advisor to the Prime Minister.
Who the Prime Minister doesn't listen to.
Absolutely does not listen to him. Or maybe actually we trust him because we're a bunch of gullible fools and he's a trickster. Just because he's on this list doesn't mean he's actually trustworthy.
I bet he believes in anthropogenic global warming.
I'm sure he does. Because he's a scientist. And it means there's about a 99% chance of that. Third place is Sir Paul Callaghan, who's a physicist and was the New Zealander of the Year in 2011. Fourth place, a Chief High Court judge called Justice Helen Winkleman.
You're coming to a very important question in this list as you get to number six, which is Brett McKenzie of Flight of the Conchords, who is, two or three places ahead of Jermaine Clement?
Two ahead of Jermaine, yeah.
Why is Brett more trustworthy than Jermaine?
Well, look at that. Look at handsome. Jermaine's eyes.
He's more handsome.
Yeah, he's got the smaller one, isn't he?
He's got hooded eyes. No, he was in the smaller one.
He was in the Lord of the Rings. He was an elf. You've got to trust an elf.
Jermaine wasn't.
Figwit.
That's right, Figwit.
What did they ask?
Simon Galt.
These?
Simon Galt coming in at number 9.
I've trusted him to cook me a steak, and he did a bloody good job. I don't know if it was actually him, but
you know why he's so trustworthy.
No, why?
In vino veritas.
Now, from what I understand, they did a survey with
asked people to rank them,
with
they?
Over 700 people, and I believe that they gave them a list of 100 people, and they got them to rank them from that.
Did they have like a bio or something? Because I'm pretty sure if you went and took that number of people off the street and asked them who
Sir Peter Gluckman or
yeah,
the other
they wouldn't
top
know.
Ones. They wouldn't even know. I don't know.
Do you know what? I bet they actually started it from the other end. So they went, you know.
Who do you trust the least?
Who do you trust the least? And they go, Hone Haruwera, because he's at 100. And then they said, Rodney Hyde, he's 99.
By the time they get to the top, you haven't heard of.
Yeah, by the time they get to the top, they're like, oh, fuck, have we done Bill English? Yeah, he was 94. Okay, who's this Ray Avery guy? Okay, make him number one. Fuck it, I don't care. As long as Haruwera, Hyde,
Key.
Fucking Turia, Sharples, English, Anderton, Paul Henry, Paul Holmes, and John Key are in the fucking bottom 10 out of them, I don't care who's number one.
Kevin Milne, I'm very surprised. He should be a sir by now, Kevin Milne.
He's been at the top before, hasn't he? I'm pretty sure he's been most trusted in the past.
I'm surprised he's at number 20.
Why? It's because he's got a brain tumor. He can't trust the guy with the brain tumor.
Oh, no, because he could be making stuff up or hearing things.
Could do anything. Sorry, and it probably means he's touched by the devil.
It's very mean.
Yes, it is very mean. I'm really surprised by this, by Matt McCartan, unionist, who I would have thought that a lot of people would, I mean, at least 50% of the population, for ideological reasons, would probably hate him and would put him way down the list simply for that reason. The last on the list that I'm looking at, number 32, is Rhys Darby. I don't know why I'd call him trustworthy. He did go a little bit wrong with the AFACT advertising campaign.
Now, he claims that that's not quite what it seems.
Yeah.
He fronted. He complained on Twitter because he was being called out for fronting the campaign and being the man of the campaign. He just said, no, I simply did some voice work.
Right. He also said, I haven't done anything wrong. Mm. And so what would it mean to have done something wrong?
This is, it's also confusing.
It is terribly confusing. All right. Enough of this story.
Alison Holst at 38.
Yeah. Wow.
Joe Seeger at 47.
So, oh, that's right. No, that's fair.
Match your own Simon Barnett?
Did they give an option of Willie? I've got Willie Appiata in there, but is it Willie Appiata and option two, Willie Appiata with a gun?
Appiata dropped from first place to 14th.
Someone told me that SAS members were always allowed to carry a gun. Even when they're off duty, they were allowed to carry a handgun. I don't believe this person. He lied about a lot of things, but there you know. Maybe Willie Appiata is always Willie Appiata with a gun.
Yeah. Peter Jackson has dropped from 11 last year to 74.
Oh, that's right. I wanted to mention that
stuff.
Because I think that Peter Jackson's been overrated for a long time. He's been lining his pockets. And, I mean, he's a second-rate writer. I mean, he's a rubbish writer. But he's a really clever businessman, and he has managed to negotiate to get more good movies done here. Doesn't make him a good filmmaker. The good films he makes are based on original material. I mean, if you look at Bad Taste, it's a cult classic because it's a splatter movie. It's not a good movie. It's madness. It's ridiculous. I think he's incredibly overrated.
I still want to know where Phil Goff is on the list.
He's at 94, 97.
So lower, much lower than Key.
No, that's only a few lower than Key.
Well, okay, a bit lower than Key. But mind you, once you get down there, it's probably logarithmic.
All right, and let me point out that there are two SAS people on this list.
96.
Because Jerry Mataparai, Governor General Designate, and former SAS guy, is actually in place, 11th place, above Appiata. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on. This is boring. This is just a list of names. This is like reading the fucking Bible. next story, Bitcoins. Bitcoins are weird.
Bitcoins.
Do you guys know about Bitcoins and how this
stuff? How much background do we need to give on Bitcoin?
I can't really give background because I barely understand it. Bitcoins are
invented by a economics. Is he a professor or just an economist?
I thought he was probably a mathematician.
A guy that has an unhealthy interest in economics. He invented a currency which is self-limiting. It is generated through algorithmically on your computer, and it gets harder and harder to generate new ones. So therefore, there's a couple of hundred thousand whatever in circulation, and it will not grow very fast at all after that.
Yeah, because the computer processing power required to find additional codes that can be used as bitcoins. If you find one and you're the first to claim it, you own it, and you can then immediately sell it on one of the bitcoin exchanges.
So it's vaguely analogous to mining a precious metal.
Right.
So it's becoming
once you've got it, it's yours. Yeah. You can sell it. Then someone else has
working
it.
To get it.
That's right. And there's less and less, the big gold veins are gone. Mm. So to begin with, it was really easy to find them because no one had found any. But now it gets harder and harder and harder. And
the theory being you can send these tokens around anonymously and they have value. So you can go and buy a piece of fruit with them.
I don't understand.
And they actually do have value.
It sounds very pyramidy, though.
It's definitely pyramidy. But they do actually have value because it costs resources to generate them.
How is it pyramid?
Because they're so hard to find.
How is it more pyramid-y than gold?
Well, I don't know that it is, but at least
gold has arbitrary value as well, right?
Some innate value in that it's
useful for electronics,
used for stuff.
Right. The fact that it costs computer power to get the thing doesn't mean it has value. Surely, its ability to be used for something that gives it value.
I think just like pretty much all currencies, it only has a value because people believe it has a value.
Right. Do people believe the gold has a value?
Yes.
All right, then it has value.
What can I buy with a Bitcoin?
You can buy drugs.
Oh, cool.
I don't want drugs.
You can buy can buy Boy Scout badges.
You can buy credit card numbers.
I thought you were going to say Boy Scouts for a second there. I don't need to buy credit card numbers. I can get them off the internet.
Yeah, the Labour Party website.
So what do you want to say about Bitcoin, Morgan? It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's more interesting now than it was a couple of weeks ago.
It's a bit of a bubble, isn't it? It's growing. The value has been going up crazily. Is that right?
The value was going up incredibly, and then they had a recession, like a one-day recession, where it dropped like 18% of its value in one day because of a little bit of trading. And then there was a massive heist where one Bitcoin miner, and that's what these people who run, they build these computers with special graphics cards with a particular kind of graphics processing unit, which can do these algorithms faster than, you know, a normal CPU. And some of these people just have like dozens of these computers in their garages burning through electricity. And there've been several cases now of police bursting into houses running Bitcoin mining looking for heat lamps, people growing marijuana in their houses, because apparently it generates a similar usage pattern with massively heightened power usage. But it's worth it. It's profitable to do, even though it uses so much power. I understand that the power is about 10% of the value of
each. So this guy was done by a keylogger or some basic zero.
Someone managed to get into his computer. Yeah. He'd been a miner, and he had estimated between $250,000 and $750,000, depending on the value of the bitcoins at whatever time he sold them. He had between $250,000 and $750,000 worth of bitcoins stolen from his computer because they managed to get in, get his data file with his encryption keys. And the really tough thing is that then he could see exactly where it was going, because the nature of the system is that, you know, each person who holds them, it's kind of signs it like a trust chain in some kinds of in public key encryption schemes. So he could see the ID that it was, that all of his bitcoins were transferred to, but he couldn't reverse it because there is no central controlling authority. If you are,
it's decentralized by nature,
it's completely decentralized, and it's not possible to centralize it because it's designed.
Can I sum up? People are using processing power to apply to search for keys that match an algorithm, and when they find them, they can register them as being the first person to discover this unique resource. Each Bitcoin is utterly unique. There is a market for them. People are not only buying them, but people are stealing them.
Yep.
They're decentralized, and it's sort of open source currency in a way.
Yep.
And people are having police knock in doors because they think that something illegal is going on, and it's people having like massive numbers of processors set up trying to find Bitcoins.
Yep.
We're living in the future.
It feels science fiction, doesn't it?
It is science fiction.
It's incredible. Awesome. And the most moral panicky vendor who accepts these Bitcoins, and it's, I mean, I'm not, if you do a Google search, what can I buy with a Bitcoin? You can get a list. There's a bunch of different things because they do have value. They can be exchanged dollars. The biggest site that's most frequently used is called Silk Road, and they sell illegal drugs. They sell acid and marijuana.
Dodgy stuff.
Yep. And so you buy it with this sort of untraceable currency that you don't know where they are or where they're posting the stuff from. But the risk is anyone can go on there as a vendor. The US government could go on there as a vendor. And even if you buy with a Bitcoin, if you give your home address and they post it there, the government's not going to send you the drugs. They're going to send some DEA guys to bust down your door and say, hello, dickhead.
This is absolutely fascinating to me. And I can't wait to find out more about Bitcoins. This is the coolest thing I've heard.
I've installed the Bitcoin client, and I apparently don't understand because
Yeah, anyone can be a miner. You don't have to have the special GPU. You will just be much slower. And you will be probably slow enough that it's no longer profitable based on the power that you use.
When I first started
depends on whose power you're using, mate. Some of us work for a living.
That's true. That's absolutely right. And so people who run things like computer labs at schools or at universities, and especially if they are about to buy new computers and have control over what kind of graphics card goes into them, they could become actually not super wealthy because, I mean, they'd probably only be making thousands of dollars a month, but they could make money out of essentially nothing. If you're not paying for your power, it becomes vastly more profitable.
The other really interesting thing is apparently right about now the IMF is saying it could be a good thing for there to be a global static currency that's not a reserve currency that people can index to.
I don't think this is it.
No, me neither.
It has all the hallmarks of what they want.
When I started to look at it, I thought maybe, because you could almost see this being like, you know, SETI and the various, distributed computing
folding at home.
I could see this tying in with that, and you actually get some sort of valid payment in exchange for your computing time.
Let me just point one thing out. The fastest supercomputer in the world is, I can't pronounce this, I think it's Chinese, it's the Tiani 1A, and that has 2.56 petaflops.
You're wrong.
Well, according to Metafilter, this is the number one in the top 500.
Came online today or yesterday.
Okay, shut up. That's not important. How many is it?
8 petaflops.
8 petaflops. That's nothing. 10. There are 154 petaflops of CPUs and GPUs computing Bitcoins right now. 154. That's how many, I mean, you take how many of the world's fastest supercomputers and combine them together.
What a waste of fucking time.
Is it though? These people are actually making money out of it.
They're making money until the...
They're making money if they sell.
Until a government comes down and says this is...
What can a government do?
I don't know.
What they can do is say it's illegal for a credit card company to fund...
Cash Bitcoins.
Exactly.
You can't launder them.
Yeah. I don't understand it still.
But as far as I know, no country outside the States has ever done anything like that.
Maybe we should see if Bernard can talk about it, because I don't understand it.
It's tough. It's really tricky stuff. It'd be nice to actually talk to a miner. So if any listeners are Bitcoin miners, maybe not someone who's just tried it, but someone who's actually given it a real go and made, maybe if you've made at least $1,000 out of it, maybe we'd like to talk to you about it and talk to you about your experiences. Or if you lost money out of it, actually, that'd probably be even more interesting. But the global supply of these particular ATI video cards is completely taken up by miners. Because the difference between the best video card...
So you're saying there's no point in me going home tonight and starting to mine Bitcoins?
I'm not
going to
say there's no point. You would probably still be profitable.
Interesting. I have to try.
But there is, you would make like a couple of dollars a month probably. Whereas people with these rigs are making certainly thousands of dollars a month. But I mean, it's not a lot of money, but it's incredible that they can do it just by finding numbers. Mm. They're just finding numbers, big numbers, difficult numbers.
That's not significantly different in terms from a wider perspective than
gold mining.
Yeah, gold mining and World of Warcraft. Yeah. You know, all you're doing is walking around an imaginary place,
except World
mining
of Warcraft
imaginary
gold.
Stuff.
The good thing about this is World of Warcraft gold has diminishing value because it's easy to mine.
Yeah, that's right, and it doesn't go away afterwards.
You know what though? If I could use Bitcoins to pay for a Zune pass, that would rock.
I bet you can, because you can use Bitcoins to buy
prepaid credit cards,
right? And if you could get a US prepaid credit card.
I should look into this.
Anyway, tell me about Zune Pass. I understand that this is some kind of subscription service.
Zune Pass has been around forever. It's been around for years and years and years. It is like US 15 bucks to 12 bucks a month if you buy it at bulk.
About 25 cents New Zealand now?
Yeah. It's something like $15 New Zealand a month for anything. The music you can eat off the Zune service.
How can that be possible? This is some kind of illegal Napster thing, is it?
No, it's rental. So as soon as you stop paying, you don't have the music. But you do get 10 unencumbered songs a month as well, 10 credits. So it's just analogous to...
Do those credits accrue, or do you have to use them each month?
I think they accrue. I'm pretty sure they accrue.
Yeah.
But that's equivalent to an album a month for $15, which is not bad at all.
Well, that's about what you pay for an album, isn't it?
Yeah. And in the meantime, if you've got a Zune pass, you just grab whatever you want.
What the fuck do I know about paying for an album?
Exactly. But the thing I love about it is I've been going on, ranting on for ages about, I want to pay for the stuff I use.
I want to pay for TV.
I want to pay for TV. So if there was a Zune for TV, I'd love it. But I want to pay for music as well.
Yeah.
I want to discover new music. It's fantastic for that. It's basically iTunes Ping, but it's inherent to the service. So if you
so they've copied this off Apple?
No, it's been around for much longer than...
No, that's not possible. Apple are the innovators. No.
Yeah, I think so.
So you tick a box saying, I'm happy to share my music preferences. And by doing that, you become part of the swarm. So I can be listening to the new Eminem or Beastie Boys, whatever, and hit show me the cloud of associated
Nickelback.
Music. Nickelback.
I love Nickelback.
It's
the haunting melodies.
Avril Lavigne is my secret passion.
She's a cellist, I think.
No, she's just
Canadian. A Canadian cellist? No, she's a flautist.
Is she? No, she's just a singer.
Avril Lavigne,
pop star. Yeah. She's a pop star.
I thought that was the English guy.
Anyway, and it will show me associated music similar to this, and I can then go and drill into that and listen to that, and it's all fantastic. And
they copied that from Amazon.
Many cool things, like I can then download that music and sync it to my phone and listen to it.
Your Windows Phone 7 phone.
My Windows Phone 7 phone.
I haven't got one of them.
Or my Zune.
What about my Android? Can I use Zune Pass on my Android?
I downloaded some music onto my portable hard drive, didn't take it to work, hit play on my laptop.
And it was blue screened, am I right?
It played the damn music.
From your home?
From the web.
Is it some kind of wireless
from
thing?
From the web.
What are you talking about from the web?
Because it knew that I'd download it from it, so it just started streaming it.
So they copied that from Apple's iCloud.
They did it well before iCloud.
No.
So anyway, it's all...
You're
it's all,
such a fucking fanboy. You're delusional.
Screw fanboyism. This is the way it should be. And the thing that fucks me off is that I had to go through a third party and get them to buy me a Zune Pass and them to set me up a US
that
Live
sounds like socialism.
So that I could use the service that I wanted to use.
Did you meet this third party behind, like, in a dark alley somewhere?
It felt like that. And I was actually feeling bad about it. And then I thought, no, fuck it. I am giving you guys money for a service that I want to use.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to use. And you are the
say it. Gold, you want to say it.
The gold.
You want to drop that word.
Pus-filled maggoty cunts that
are...
Oh, there it is. There we go!
That are coming to New Zealand through your bridled, saddled fucking GIMP's NZ fact,
yeah,
getting us a three strikes and you're outlaw, taking people off the internet, and the next day, the next week, coming back and signing up to the UN treaty that says internet access is a human right and should never be curtailed. In what world is that good...
It's really,
you know,
it's not consistent.
Social behavior. It's not consistent.
The really interesting thing about this whole thing, though, and that is that the regional delineations that mean this stuff happens in the States and doesn't happen here. It's the same with, like, Netflix. You know, if we lived in the States, the television that we may or may not download from the internet, we could watch.
You
don't
even have to live in
the States. A amount of money and watch it legally on Netflix.
It's so bloody arbitrary. If I had a US credit card, if I had a US social security number and lived in Afghanistan, I could still use a Zune Pass. If I lived in, you know, anywhere, I could still use a Zune Pass. All I need is a US credit card to do it.
The problem is zoning. It's region coding, right? Like with DVDs. The problem is regions.
Thing. Yeah, it's really complicated. The television's a really interesting example because it's really clear. Like in television, right? So let's pick a TV show.
It comes off you.
Say Doctor Who from the BBC. Or
how about Game of Thrones?
Okay, Game of Thrones.
I've got episode 10. My auntie's about to send it to me on VHS.
Man, that's
I'm pretty sure it's in the mailbox waiting for me to watch it. And I'm so excited.
So
excited.
The issue there, right, is that whoever makes that show has a series of rights. And they take those rights to an international marketplace and sell them to broadcasters around the world. So say, for example, if TVNZ or Prime were to buy Game of Thrones, they seem like the most likely candidates. Mm-hmm. Then they would obviously not want the show to already be in the market here. So that's why it's still in the... And that kind of makes sense for broadcast. It doesn't make sense for music.
It doesn't make sense
for movies. It doesn't make sense for DVDs. All of those things can be... You know, they don't have a broadcast channel.
It doesn't make sense for broadcast if the original broadcast just said, anyone who wants to watch it, give me a dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just give me a dollar and you can have
it. It's not that simple because at the moment, at the moment, with broadcast, all of that stuff is still built around a programmed broadcast model. It's not.
Can't I buy episodes of Game of Thrones on iTunes?
If you have a US credit card and a US address,
which requires that you probably sign terms and conditions and, yeah. and actually break the law. And
sign away your rights. But this is, well, the, this is the thing.
Breaking the law one way or the other.
But that's because in the US it's already had first play, right? So the network whoever makes it has signed up for rights to first play, and possibly they also have it on their catch-up service.
Didn't they play Doctor Who, the new new season of Doctor Who? They premiered simultaneously, in the US and UK to prevent exactly that and the massive number of American viewers who had just downloaded.
And TVNZ's tried to do that. Like the final series of Lost, they tried to do that as much as they possibly could, except it becomes complicated because the US TV season is not like ours.
Lost wasn't complicated enough.
Giant breaks.
Exactly. But it takes all those breaks. Yeah. So if New Zealand were to start at the same time as the US, New Zealand
so this is all academic. This is all you know, mechanical and whatever. But the crux, the thing that really makes me bloody ranty is the whole point that they come and say, "Here's the music, free for anyone who wants to buy it in the States can have it. You guys down in New Zealand, wait. And if you download it, it's fucking illegal. And we're going to change your law from the USA. We're going to come in and lobby hard and change your law to make it illegal for you. And then, additionally, when the UN says this is not right, we're going to get on their side as well. So your law is now fucked, and we're going to go with the UN and look like the good boys." How
Labour Foreign
morally
Affairs
bullshit is that?
Labour Foreign Affairs spokesperson Marion Street asked in Parliament whether this meant that the national government would be repealing the now apparently a breach of human rights provisions, disconnection provisions in the new copyright law.
And what did Smile and Wave say?
Smile and Wave denied that we had endorsed the statement with the UN.
What?
Yeah, except that we clearly have. And it's New Zealand is listed in the preamble to this report, along with the United States. The United States being the source of all of this pain. Pain for fans. Yes. It's the people who love the material. It's the people who buy the DVD box sets and go and see the movie, as well as buying the DVD and then the Blu-ray and then the special edition and then the bookends and the action figures. They're the people who are downloading the most.
The most frustrating thing about that copyright debate, watching it on TV, watching the Parliament debate, was that no one brought up the concept of better than free, which is exactly what this is. The way that piracy has been knocked down so much in the States was
iTunes.
iTunes.
Amazon.
Zune, for God's sake. It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah. It is easy to be better than free because people want to be legit.
I absolutely love it to death. Easy. I want to go and scream from the rooftops that everyone should illegally go and get a freaking Zune pass.
Yeah, absolutely. And
ZunePassAnywhere.com.
So here's, I'm not going to research this.
ZunePassAnywhere.com.
ZunePassAnywhere.com. The premium's about $5.
This episode was brought to you by ZunePassAnywhere.com.
You don't need a Windows phone. All you need is a desktop that'll run the Zune software.
Not Apple at all.
No.
Oh, hey, why not?
One more thing.
Yes.
So, you know, Netflix in the States commissioned a series recently. I don't remember what it was called. It's not important. But I saw a comment or a blog post about it, and then I thought about it more. And Netflix in the States, I don't know the numbers, but say they charge $25 a month or whatever it is, and they have, I don't know, in the States probably a few million subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix has enough money to actually be able to produce original programming. And then Netflix, as in the position, Netflix could change broadcast as we know it, because Netflix could then
open it worldwide,
sell it worldwide for their first play could be through their website, and then they could still sell broadcast rights to broadcasters.
Okay,
it has to flip around. That's the only way for broadcast. It's the only way it's going
to
fit.
That's what I want. I think the internet needs to be a zone. The internet needs to be a region, because it is the age of the internet that has caused this pain for the broadcasters. They don't. I think that they probably want to have a solution, but they can't solve it because everyone is operating independently and trying to buy this content and trying to protect their their staff and their payrolls. Now let me just point one thing out. Netflix is not $25. Netflix is $8 a month.
There you go.
US dollars.
$8. $10. You can pay more.
Like 10 million subscribers.
Yeah. And you can pay more than that to have, I don't even know how it works now, but back in the day when it was, they sent you a DVD, you could pay more to have more DVDs at once.
And it works on pretty much anything, any console, any phone, anything.
Yeah, I think they've got it on like PlayStations. Androids. I think they've probably got it on Apple TVs. They've got it on all of those devices, but not New Apple. Zealand. Oh, they don't have it on Apple TVs? I thought that there was maybe it's on hacked ones only. I've seen it. Yeah.
No, because Apple wants you to buy
But not in New Zealand. Not in New Zealand. Not even if you pay. Okay, Ryan, I understand that you have to leave us early. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan.
I love you guys.
Bye-bye. He's gone.
Bye, Ryan.
Okay, next story.
How long have we got to go?
I have no idea because we did all that talking about the Liz thing and that's going to be cut up all
next
to hell.
Next story. Where do you want to go for the next story? That was, I need to calm down. Duke Nukem must be awesome.
Duke Nukem must be amazing. I mean, they
were waiting so long.
They worked on it for how long?
It.
10, 12 years?
15? 15
years? I'm pretty sure 100 years or so.
The Dead Sea Scrolls talked about Duke Nukem, I think.
Mm. Oh, what you'll actually find is that, what's that big thing that was supposedly wrapped around Christ? The Shroud of Turin.
Yeah.
That's actually, it was, if you look more closely, it's actually Duke Nukem.
That was a design document for Duke Nukem.
Yeah.
Well, it's
a sprite. It's a sprite skin.
Some reviewers have been a bit mean, and I don't know why. It got ratings, like on Metacritic, it's got a score of 49, which means it's shit.
That's very bad. I talked to a guy who said he bought it, went home, played it for a couple of hours on a Friday night,
yep.
Took it back to EB Games the next morning and said, can I trade this in?
Yeah.
And the guy said, you're the fourth person this morning that's trading it in.
Far out. Yeah. Actually, the Metascore, as of the time we're recording, the Metascore is up to 50 out of 100, which is extraordinarily bad.
What's the user
average?
The
user score is 3.9.
Has there been?
3.9.
David Ferrier's got it. If only we'd got him on the show.
This is incredible.
I saw him on Twitter. He tweeted a picture of himself playing it.
Here's an excerpt from a user review. This has to be one of the worst games I've played in a long time. The joke in the games are not even funny. You start off the game pissing.
I read a review that said,
wow, very clever.
I read a review that talked about the fact that, you know, the original Duke Nukem, all the misogyny and, stupid jokes and stuff, and it sort of came along with the story.
Yeah.
But they're all forced in the new one, apparently. They're all forced and upfront and...
Yeah.
Horrendous. And apparently the PR company started to come down on people for bad reviews?
Well, that's right. The PR company is the Redner Group. And on Twitter, they did this in public. They said, too many went too far with their reviews. We are reviewing who gets games next time and who doesn't, based on today's Venom. So they're saying, if you've given Duke Nukem a bad review, you better change your tune, because if you're a game review site, we're not going to give you games in advance next time.
That's awesome.
Well, that's just dumb.
It's incredibly dumb. And of course, they delete it. But too late. It's the internet, dickhead. Doesn't matter if you delete it or not. It's already out there. The internet is a copying machine. All the internet does is copy things all day and night.
I love that.
And once it's on there, it's copied.
That's you wonder if that guy, you know, whoever posted that had that little view of, you know, sort of satisfaction. Yeah, deleted. Yeah. Whereas you or I, as soon as we hit the post button, we go, shit.
I wonder how amazing the game would have been had it come out in 1998 or whenever. It would have been
as amazing as any sequel, which is, you know.
I know that our listeners don't enjoy it when I do readings, but I'm going to read an entire review in full. This is from Minecraft creator, multimillionaire Notch. His review, let me just have a little drink. Wet my lips.
This is going to take so long.
The review is, don't play it.
Yep, and?
That's the whole review. Apparently, he got so bored playing it that it was just childish that he just stopped. He didn't even bother finishing this game, this piece of shit game. No wonder they didn't want to release it for so long. I think that the reason they didn't want to release it is because they knew it was bad. And someone, I think, acquired the development, and I think they just wanted to recoup their costs somehow. And so they finished it off. They polished the turd a little bit, and then this is what we get. A piece of junk.
I wonder if they even covered their costs.
If you enjoyed Duke Nukem 3D way back when, come get some. Shake it, baby. If you enjoyed that, just don't play this, because it'll be like watching Knight Rider.
The amazing thing is that new release games...
Which will spoil your childhood, just by the way.
New release games on Steam, where I buy most of my games. Again, a great delivery system. About $50 usually, US.
Yep.
They had Duke Nukem up there for $79.
They're jokers, aren't they? Aren't they absolute jokers?
It's the most
jokers?
Expensive game I've seen on Steam. And if I was even thinking of buying it, I would have been put off by that.
I'm a bit of a weirdo.
I'm downloading the original Duke Nukem.
I still buy games on DVD and install them. Why? Even Steam games. And then they update via Steam. I don't know. I just have this funny idea that, you know, you actually have something tangible.
Steam games are weird in that you can't sell them at all.
Right.
You can't trade them or anything.
Yeah.
You can't even swap them. It's really bad. It's the most sort of offensive DRM.
I'm considering buying a game on Steam for the Sting Machine, Saints Row 2, even though Saints Row 3 is about to come out, and I'm so excited about it because it's got co-op. It's got multiplayer co-op. You can play start to finish the entire game with two people.
I didn't get into Saints Row. I tried it. I didn't.
Saints Row 2.
I couldn't do it.
It's so good. It's so good.
No, it didn't work for me.
It's like Grand Theft Auto, but good. You might say, but Grand Theft Auto is good.
I downloaded it
Saints
on your
Row 2,
foundation, and
even
like
better.
It.
I'm surprised you didn't like
didn't
it.
Didn't have the same feel as GTA.
Maybe what you needed to do was dress your character up as a hot little Asian chick with white
hat.
Mime face and like a clown suit and a running around with a katana because that's what I did and I had a great time playing that game. Jeez, it's so fun. You know, I mean, in Rockstar got in trouble when Grand Theft Auto, they left in a cut mini game, which was like having sex with your girlfriend.
Someone had to hack it to get it in there. Hot coffee.
Hot coffee, that's right. In Saints Row 2, you can go and do streetwalking prostitution. You have to operate the blowjob with your keyboard and mouse. Okay.
Why weren't they all over the papers?
Because they're unashamed about it. It's such a great game. It's so fun. Okay, next story. If you're pregnant, hello, listeners. Are you pregnant right now, listener? I don't know. What do you think our average listener looks like? Based on Twitter, our average listener is a 34-year-old sysadmin girl.
Girl?
Well, she could be pregnant then.
Averagely girl?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
No, probably not. No, probably not. But they're mainly coders and sysadmins. But we also have a lot of girls, listeners.
We do.
Which I'm sorry, women, ladies.
Check.
No, I like girls. I like girls because I call boys boys. So I'm going to call girls girls. Hello, listeners. So, I have had a little bit to drink.
If those aforementioned girls fall pregnant, what should they do?
All I'm going to tell you, no advice. No advice from me. What do I know? I'm only an obstetrician with 25 years experience. You can call me Mr. Nickel. That would make me a surgeon, actually, I think. Do you know why they're called Mr.?
I've always wondered that. I think I know, but I can't remember.
It's because surgeons used to be butchers. They weren't doctors. So they were
barbers?
Called Mr. Butchers.
Barbers.
Butchers.
Okay.
Because they had the speed of chopping.
Accuracy and things.
Accuracy. So, I mean, there was no anaesthetic. So if you had to have your leg off, the only thing you cared about was how quick it was. And so butchers come along with their cleavers. In comes Mr. Butcher. Whap, bang! And off comes the bottom of your leg.
So then the fellow, the Royal Society of Surgery or whatever, was all...
They just kept it on. They just kept it on. I might be wrong about that. But if you're pregnant, my only word of advice to you is...
Just don't go to a butcher.
Oh, no, I don't know about that. Oh, I mean, if you're a vegetarian, don't go to a butcher.
If you're
sleep on your left side. You Why? Double your chance of miscarriage if you sleep on your right side.
Is that to do with...
Is it correlation or causation? I don't know. But all I can tell you is I enjoy sleeping on my left side better. It aligns your guts in a slightly different way.
I thought, is there also a major like coronary artery that's on one side as well?
Possibly. I'm only a surgeon. What would I know? I'm the butcher sort of surgeon.
Tell me about the coronary artery.
All I know is you should probably wipe the blood off with a rag before you go on to the next surgery. If you want medical advice, you've come to the right place. We're lawyers and doctors. We'll sort you out. We'll fix you up.
We don't have iron.
And we can probably service your car at the same time. Just give me the keys. I swear I'll bring it back.
It'll bolt straight on.
I'm not even going to give you any citations for this story. I'm not even going to put it in the show notes because, you know, that would just give you a chance to go and read up on it.
I saw it in the little show rundown thing, and I said to Melanie, my wife, who is pregnant, I said, you have to sleep on your left. And she said, why? And I said, I don't know. And I'd ask you, and you'd explain it, but you haven't really, so I'll just go back and say...
Just do it, because otherwise I'm getting a surgeon, and he's going to come over with a cleaver.
Mr. Nickel.
Next story, because I think that this is very dangerous territory.
Move on to security. Our mates Lulz sick.
Is there something about... What have they done this week?
Lulz sick.
Mm-hmm.
What haven't they done?
I just think...
The Lulz boat! I should have learned the words between then and now and come up with a longer song.
So I think I'm pretty sure Lulz sick are just more like anonymous types, but they're kind of saying they're doing it because they're just proving how bad security is at the moment. But the thing that raised my interest was someone tweeted and said, hey, Lulz sick have dropped a list of 60,000 names and passwords into a text file on the net. And it's just worth going there and having a quick look to see if your email's in there. And then that thought, maybe I should go and download the full LulzSec dumps because, you know, check if your email's in there. That's what I'm worried about. Morgan's reading the lyrics to the lulls, but...
Yeah, I was thinking about coming up with a, a few more bits for my lulls but song, but...
Don't. All I'm saying is LulzSec are really owning up the place at the moment.
They did the Senate, they did the US Senate and the CIA.
Yes, they DDoSed the CIA.
They've got the biggest balls. Oh, they also took down Minecraft.
Did they?
Why?
No. Everything.
They just did it because they wanted to. Yes, they took down Minecraft. Yes, so people couldn't log in.
So change your password.
Your password.
If you're in charge of anything vaguely important, don't use the same password as your public, anything you've used in public at all. Yep. It's just so dangerous right now.
Yeah.
It's a public service announcement for Discourse listeners.
I just use the same combination I have on my bike lock. Is that okay?
It's three digits. Is it 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah. But anyway, there's actually a plain text list of passwords.
There's quite a few. I did some searches for common New Zealand domain names. There's a fair few. I had quite a few extra.
There's a Vodafone.
Yeah, but yeah. What there isn't.
Is so there any from morgannickel.com or themonkey.net? Sorry, say it again.
There's a password and an email address, but there's no usernames. So right. You'd have to. Yeah, it's a bit tricky because you'd need to. For most websites, you'd need to decipher from the email address what the username was.
Not for webmail. I mean, if you got extra addresses there and you got webmail,
that's true.
Probably.
Yeah. To try one of those.
Yeah. I actually just had a really nice experience in terms of security. Well, I mean, I think it was nice. I enjoyed it. Maybe it was not as secure as I imagined, though. It might have been a psychological thing more than anything. I got a new credit card. The old one expired. The process to register it, once upon a time, to put a pin on it, you know, you'd have to go into the bank. Now, before you can even use the thing the first time, you have to go to the ASB site and put a pin on it. And that... activates the card. So it can't even be used at all until that point. Mm-hmm. But to do that, you need your username and password to get into the ASB site. You need to use the card security number, which is on the back, to identify the card that you're going to use. And then it gets you to put a pin in twice using your mouse, not your keyboard. And they put a keypad up on the screen and they randomize the placement of the buttons. So malware can't track where you clicked because the number... placement changes. And I didn't even notice this to begin with because I guess from playing computer games, I just automatically clicked in the right place for, you know, wherever I wanted to do my thing and, you know, went through to the confirmation and the confirmation screen has numbers in a different location. Mm-hmm. And then as well as that, it sends you a text to your registered phone and you need to put in your netcode authorization code. So it felt like there were a whole bunch of steps designed to keep it really secure.
Yeah,
and it was quick as well. It was really quick.
Easy though.
Yeah, really easy.
Easy,
really easy.
But
I'll tell you what,
simple and secure.
Don't get me started on banks. I think it was not easy.
Buying weed from Canada.
Kiwi Bank.
Oh yeah.
You know, support local, all that sort of stuff.
I would.
Their rates are cheaper than others. You know,
unless you're a business.
Got a big giant mortgage that I thought, you know, maybe we should look at. Mainly because my pay has changed from fortnightly to monthly. I thought, oh, we should really go to a, you know, it's simpler just to pay mortgage monthly.
Yeah.
And so I started looking around anyway and thought, hey, look, those guys are cheaper than what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. So you spoke to one of their agents and he said, go to this plan and this will save you $20 a month.
So right up to the point of documentation, you know, when they send out the documents and say, sign here, sign your life away here.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll just have a quick look again on their website. And then their website has a special rate that's 0.15% lower than what I've been offered.
Right.
And I rang them back.
But won't that add up to quite a lot over whatever the term of your...
30-odd grand?
What the hell? So the guy was going to pocket the difference or something?
I've got no idea.
Was he taking a commission on how much he didn't save you?
I should find out. But yeah, it was...
That's outrageous.
Outrageous. They basically tried to talk me out of it. She tried to talk me out of it when I talked to her about it. Because it was...
Did she have a reason?
It's a loan offset thing. Where
what were you going to do with that $30,000, though, Ben? You're just going to use it on prostitutes and cocaine.
Well, no, the funny thing was...
Better you give it to your bank.
They call it an offset mortgage where any savings you have, you only pay the interest on the difference between your mortgage and your savings. And given that, you know, on a reasonable salary, you're always going to have... You're always going to have a level of money in your account.
Wouldn't you just... I mean, isn't that... Why wouldn't you just have revolving credit? And then basically all of your money goes...
Revolving credit is temptation. You never, you know...
Right.
It doesn't. It's very hard to make sure that you eat away at the mortgage.
Right.
So it's standard mortgage. You pay it monthly, but during the month when you're paying, you know, when the balance is calculated, if you've got a credit balance in your normal day-to-day account. Yeah. They deduct it from the mortgage balance when they calculate the interest.
Right.
And so she seemed to be implying that this was confusing and difficult. And
that doesn't sound very confusing.
And no, it doesn't. And that you'd have to pay a fee if you wanted to go on a fixed mortgage. And I said, well, if I was on a regular floating mortgage, there would be a fee. And she said, yes, same fee.
Oh, my God.
To fix it.
I don't understand.
Yeah, it's really quite... Anyway, yeah.
That just seems bizarre. So Kiwi very Bank... Bizarre. We might own them, but it sounds like they're not all good.
I've been with them before a long time ago, and my experience is once you're there, it's reasonably smooth. But trying to get service, jeez.
That's kind of the same with changing. I've changed banks in the past. It can be a bit painful, eh?
Yeah.
I have never changed banks.
You're an ASB boy all the way
Yeah,
through.
I've been an ASB boy since I was at primary school. The thing with the little elephants. I mean, we did banking with little passbooks at primary school.
Cash in.
And I've been.
It's funny they've come back. Yeah, my son has got a bracelet. You know those what would Jesus do bracelets?
Yeah,
he's got one that says spend some on you, but save some too.
Right.
Oh, but do they still get a passbook? Do they?
They can. Yeah, I think he's a bit too
passbooks
young.
Are weird. Passbooks are so weird.
Are those printers?
Those guy in the bank getting his updated.
Do they still do them?
You saw someone with a passbook?
Yeah, an older guy getting it updated. You know, you get a printer.
They print a receipt and staple it in now, don't they? They don't put it in the. That passbook printer was great. Sense. Where they'd open the book
and slot it in.
How did they know where to put it? They'd have to wind it up, wouldn't they, manually?
That's incredible.
I loved it.
It's just the way things used to work.
Filling in those withdrawal forms.
In just a few years,
so much fun.
People will just not understand how recently things seemed so archaic.
Do you remember going to the bank and the first time
I ever withdrew money from my account.
And you filled in the form?
No. I went, well, yeah, I probably did. I filled in the form and I went up to the counter and it was $20 I was taking out, I think. And, you know, so the woman's being very nice because I'm probably about 4 and I'm there with my dad. And she's like, how would you like that? And I said, yes, please.
Give me a 20, bitch.
Yeah. A lot. I would like it a lot. Give it to me now.
I don't remember the first withdrawal I made. I know that I've never been good at doing checks because I guess I was sort of in the overlap, but even with my business, I had to send checks to people, but I was never good at it. It was like, I mean, it's actually simple, but for whatever reason, it wasn't a normal part of my experience. So, you know, I had to remember every time, but I do remember the very first time I used FPOS, and it was actually at the film festival. It was in the Civic. I went from the bank across the road, across Queen Street. I went to the Civic and I bought with my mate, James. And we bought, you know, like 15 tickets or 25 tickets or whatever. And away we went. It was the first time I ever used an FPOS card. And that was that.
Do you remember the hole in the wall? It
was like 1996 or something. It's not that long ago. I mean, it is actually kind of a long time ago. Probably some of our listeners weren't alive yet, but right? They probably weren't. Now, what's there's a chap down in the guy that won the keyboard.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yes, yeah, Matt Hartley. Yeah, he's a young chap.
Yeah. No, that's not right. No, it's not Matt Hartley. It's someone else. Someone who was on the chat room, and he's only like 13 or 14 years old. So he wasn't even alive when I used that FPOS card. So actually, for some people, it is a long time ago. For me, it just kind of feels pretty recent. Really. Outrageous. Okay, this is probably boring. Well, you know what's really new?
No, what's really new, Morgan?
The Nokia N9.
It is really new.
Oh, wow.
It's so new.
This is a tech podcast.
So new, the ones I played with today had prototype inscribed on the back of them.
You've actually played with one?
Yes.
I've only seen renderings.
I fingered it.
Oh, boy. Did you cold finger it?
I fingered a black one.
Did you give it a good one? Oh, no, I've just realized something terrible.
What?
It doesn't matter. You'll find out in a minute. Have you just finished your tea? Yeah, it's not related to that, I promise. Are you feeling a little bit woozy?
the roofies in my tea.
So the Nokia N9, it's beautiful. It looks like the screen kind of bubbles out from the body. It's quite square.
It's really quite weird because it's got a polycarbonate shell, which kind of it reminds me
Does
a lot
that mean
of
it's
the,
bulletproof?
A lot of one of the nanos. I can't remember which version nano it is. It's kind of, you know, rounded edges.
Does that mean it's going to be really scratchy? I mean, scratchable.
No, the thing is that it's color impregnated. So even if you did scratch it.
So it doesn't matter if you scratch it?
No. Right. It's all the same color all the way through.
Yep. And there was black. There's black, pink, which I'd get black.
Black, pink, and blue, which is cyan and magenta, but, you know, black, pink, and blue.
Right.
And
so it's K, C, and Y.
Yep.
C and M. Fuck. God! Ah!
No Y. No KY for you.
I wonder why there's no Y. They could have really played that up.
They could. CMYK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got Gorilla Glass screen.
Gorilla Glass screen.
Which is like strong as hell, right?
It's vaguely domed. And what they've also done is, you know how normally you can actually see a gap in the phone? You can sort of see, like a mirror, you can see a glass, then you can see a gap, then you can see the LCD.
Yeah.
You can't see the gap. It's like... it's right behind the glass.
And so it's sort of like looking at e-paper. So it feels like you're looking at the surface?
Not quite the surface, just a little bit below. Like you can see the thickness of the glass. But if you look at it almost dead side on, you can almost see the screen. So it's the screen. It's almost like the screen itself is actually bubbling up and sort of three-dimensional.
Right.
It's really quite well done.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I looked at this thing, and to begin with, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is going to be a joke. It's Nokia. This is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the problem is it's running Mego. Where is Mego? And so I went and looked at the Ovi App Store.
Which is going to be renamed Nokia Store, yeah.
And it is ridiculous. The apps are so awful. I mean, there's
Angry
like,
Birds and Facebook and, you know.
Okay, and they're the same. They're the same, probably. Yeah. But then, I mean, I looked at the latest apps uploaded and there were things like Nigel's Flickr. And it is one dude's Flickr account. And he's like, for some reason, in the App Store, is this guy's
app that
he made to look at his own photos.
Because there's a Ovi Express thing you can do. You can give it an RSS feed and it creates you an app.
Right. So that's what he's done, and it's probably in the App Store.
Probably.
What the hell?
So then they can say, look, we have 100,000 apps, and 99,000 of them, and a bitch ain't one.
What? But it shouldn't be in the App Store.
No, it shouldn't be. But the other thing is that if...
And there weren't very many apps either.
If Nokia weren't doing Windows Phone 7, I would have looked at Mego and said, actually... this is a shit ton better than Symbian, and it's quite an interesting operating system. It was a little bit flaky, but it's better than Symbian, and it's a valid smartphone operating system. But it's—I think someone said it's a zombie OS. It's a dead man walking.
Yeah, yeah. Should be Android. Android, inevitable champion. Android is already the biggest in the world.
Dylan, how's your Android phone, Dylan?
It's a little bit good. But a little bit not so good.
Android, it's a little bit good.
No, I really like the phone. I like the operating system, but this particular model of phone, or possibly this particular phone, has some glitches.
Have you googled the same glitch and see if it's like common?
What's that?
There's no glitches with my phone.
Have you googled the same issue? No, because yours is a 2 degrees X5.
Some people report the 2 degrees, same error so on good. The phone, and quite a lot of people can't replicate it. So. Right.
No, I mean, I tell you what, Morgan, you were joking about 2 degrees X5. There's pretty much universal praise for that phone on my in the 150 odd comments on my blog post about it.
Mm.
There's a few little niggles about can't connect to Wi-Fi unless I like reset it or something. But apart from that,
I actually have had that.
Comes up on a lot.
But I thought it was just the access point at work, which is like a super complicated network with hundreds of nodes. I thought it was just kind of losing it. It never really seems to have a problem here, for instance. But I have actually noticed that sometimes it doesn't seem to connect.
WP Enterprise or something like that, or
some people have said that
the Linksys routers don't play very nicely with quite a lot of Android phones with the various chipset. I think it's one of the chipsets they use or something.
Right.
And I've got a Linksys at home, and I have some problems with Wi-Fi on my phone. But
now back to the N9. Weird sort of... See, it's kind of analogous to Kin in Microsoft. It's almost like they were so far into it when they made the Windows Phone 7 decision that they had to carry on.
Yeah.
Probably they actually started production of the hardware and
this
sort of thing. So they said, well, let's release it, see what happens.
I think they shouldn't have. I think they should have put Windows Phone 7 on it.
Yeah, it needs hardware buttons, though. The funny thing is...
Why does it Windows Phone 7 has to have hardware buttons?
It does.
Why?
Because it does.
It's in the spec. Because they want a universal, similar experience for everyone, and they want to be able to have a base ROM that's the same across all phones.
Wasn't it Windows Phone 7, though, where the keys moved around? Was that? No, it wasn't. You
were
Android. Arguing about that, weren't you?
It's Android. Where the back button moved. The back button, actually, there's some weird things, because in the Twitter app that I use...
Why would you not put the back button on the left?
The reply button looks almost exactly the same as the back button. It's like, what are you thinking?
It's a curved
you
back.
You dickheads. Yeah. I mean, okay, so it's
because it's the same as the back button on your phone. Some phones don't have a back button.
Right, okay.
Maybe the phones they tested on didn't have a back
button. Right.
Do they?
I buy it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure back button's required on Android
phones. All right, back buttons. Back fat. Pork belly.
N9. So it's got lovely looking phone. Lovely. It's got Angry Birds. Oh, it's got nice NFC. It's apparently got Angry Birds where if you touch your phone to another person's phone, it unlocks something special in Angry Birds. Maybe it's a...
But no one's ever going to do that because you'll need to have two people with
maybe
this...
Maybe it unloads a dogging level or something like that. Here, rub my phone on your
phone. Next story. Does anyone have any more stories?
I think not.
All right, let's go on to the Urban Dictionary. Discourse Weekly Show. Word of the Week.
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
My friends, only Ben can play.
Oh.
Dylan already knows why.
Oh, yeah.
Ben, your word is the.
The. D-A, to spell it, T-H-E?
Mm-hmm.
The.
The. See, you haven't listened to last week's episode.
No, I haven't.
You're a fucking traitor to discourse, and you didn't even tweet about it last week.
I listened to half.
I couldn't believe you didn't tweet about it. So,
changed.
Last week there was a reference to using the word the this week, and I fucking well have, thanks to Dylan, actually, because he pointed out that the definition is pretty friggin' great.
An Urban Dictionary definition.
Urban Dictionary. You have played this game before, haven't you, Ben? You understand that the definitions are always from Urban Dictionary.
It's an indefinite article.
Indefinite. That is absolutely not correct. I can tell you right now, no spoilers, but indefinite article is never the definition of the.
Oh,
the
high.
Is the definite article.
Which is confusing because then it can...
A would be indefinite article.
There you go. It shows you how bad my grammar is.
Yes, so I'm going to give you another chance.
Is it a definite article?
No.
I give up then.
Oh, God damn it! Would you like to do the honours there, Dylan?
I believe that is a common misspelling of tear.
Welcome to the internet! If the internet wrote a dictionary, it would fuck with you.
Oh, the internet's
weird. Oh, my God, the awesome. It doesn't sound right, does it?
No.
Oh, my God, te awesome. This has had 3,200 upvotes.
Very popular word.
Just by the way. Okay, next thing. Let's do the toot bag. Okay, so I asked about... This has been a jinkly episode. I have hardly even had anything to drink. A little bit of wine.
Two tumblers of wine is hardly
anything to drink. You've got a really compelling argument there. I'm going to find a flaw in your logic somehow. The toot bag. I asked about... So last couple of episodes,
we've made shorter episodes.
And this week is probably not going to be an hour long. It's kind of gone off the rails a little bit. So, but actually, as it turns out, no spoilers, but people probably won't care. Because I asked people if they preferred the hour-long episodes or if they preferred the longer episodes of yore. And we've got a few responses. I've selected a few of the...
Friend of the show, Walter,
at Rumsby, W. Rumsby on Twitter. I like longer episodes.
Who doesn't?
Doesn't get more clear than that.
Heath Explosion, which I think is a great Twitter handle, by the way. Big ups.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Heath Explosion. Yep. Around an hour is good, but have the occasional 2-hour ranty, lots of guests and games episode.
Right.
Like this one, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really like that. And we also got a message from a friend of the show, Sam, who won the phone that we didn't send her for like 3 months. Sakura_59. I miss the longer episodes. The random rambling tangents you went down were often the most interesting bits, in my humble opinion. So there you go. I mean, people, it seems, do sometimes like the shorter episodes, but actually they also kind of like the long episodes.
I think it's actually kind of the same as what I like as well.
Right.
You know, sometimes I don't like to sit around for 3 hours and talk, and sometimes I do.
Right. And sometimes you just have to sit around for 2 hours while I shout into the microphone and get increasingly overexcited. But I mean, if I'm 300%, everyone else probably has to reduce themselves down to about 20%, or else we won't all fit in people's ears. I will barely fit. Anything that you would like to promote this week?
Oh, there's a website which. Code2012.com.
Code2012.com.
And it's embryonic, but yep. You will find out if you go there and have
some kind of stem cell then.
Probably.
Don't
give it away. You've got to give them some effort.
I'll reverse that.
No, it's fine. Something we're working on, and we will we'll announce more over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Cool, man. So I'm really excited that you're doing whatever the thing is that you're doing. Yeah. I would like to, there's a couple of things that I would like to encourage people to check out. Number one is a BBC series called The Shadow Line, which is a drama with recent Doctor Who. Oh, God, what's his name?
How would I get hold of that?
It's fantastic. You'd have an aunt in England who records on VHS.
Right.
And then when you go and visit her, you'll watch it in her.
Cool. Good to know.
Yep. Oh, God, what is his name?
Tennant? David Tennant?
No, the one before him.
Oh, the one who's only on for one
Eccleston.
Series.
Oh, Christopher right. Eccleston. That's right. His name, right? It sounds like a joke name. It sounds like a gun show name.
Well, Eccles.
Eccles. Like Eccles. And he's in it, and a bunch of other incredibly intimidating... Oh, Elijah for Chiwotel or something. I should probably look up this guy's name. It's a really difficult name. All right, I'm going to look it up, and then you'll understand. It's like Chiwetel Elijah for...
So what are you talking about that, though? You were saying, how could I watch this? I saw a thing earlier in the week saying someone had suggested at some high level in the UK that the BBC could accept money from people overseas, like a license fee, in exchange for access to their content online.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll happen, but that was a very sensible suggestion and one that could kind of work for the BBC.
Holy fuck, Morgan's just pointing.
I would like you to try and pronounce this guy's name.
No, he's pointing me to a name on the thing, but above that at IMDb, The Shadow Line, 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb.
That's right. All I'm saying.
What the hell?
All I'm saying over here.
That is huge.
This is a seriously fucking amazing show.
So what is it about? So Chiwetel.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah,
he's the lead actor. He's quite a senior police detective, not a detective inspector, maybe a little bit higher than mm-hmm. that. And he's got a bullet in his brain. And the show begins with him on his first day back at work. He's got profound amnesia about what led to the events that ended up with him getting shot in the head. His partner was killed. With the same bullet that ended up in his brain, the bullet in his brain went through his partner's head, and we then proceed from there with him trying to track down exactly what happened, and we meet these incredibly scary criminal underworld guys. We find all this political stuff, and it just gets deeper and darker.
Sounds
and
great.
Darker, and it is fucking brilliant. I don't want to give away any spoilers.
It sounded a bit. Was that one Life on Marsy? But then the further you got into it, the less it sounds like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yes. Look at that. Get a VHS off your auntie. Just like for Top Gear next weekend.
I've just emailed my auntie about that VHS.
Yeah, tell her to record it starting. A while ago because it's finished playing.
She's got them up. They'll be in her attic.
It'll be on her PVR.
Yeah.
She'll just copy it onto a Betamax or whatever. The other thing that I would really like to suggest that people check out is a website called Doctor Who Girls Knickers.co.uk. This site is the weirdest thing I've seen in a really long time.
So this is, I was saying to Morgan earlier on that I have this adage, which I'm sure someone else has invented, but I said it many years ago, that if it exists,
yep.
It being...
Anything.
It has been taken too far on the internet.
This is a guy...
That's kind of like Rule 93.
Who collects...
Rule 34, you mean?
I don't know. Maybe.
Rule 34 is if it exists, there's porn of it.
Yeah.
This is different.
That's from XKCD.
What's Rule 93 then?
I'm sure there is a Rule 93. So this is a guy who collects the underpants of anyone who's been involved with the production of Doctor Who. This is actors, this is producers, this is directors.
Only women, though.
Well, from his about page, he says, I first started, and you should go and look at it, Doctor Who Girls Knickers.co.uk. I first started collecting knickers in 1983 when at Longleat Exhibition I was sold a pair of Janet Fielding's underwear by a makeup lady. But let me be clear on this. There is nothing perverted or weird right. about my collection. We all collect things we like, and I find knickers more personal than an autograph on the back of a plastic cup. So then Ben says...
Where's all the guys' knickers?
People are always asking me if I have any men's pants from Doctor Who. I'd like to make it absolutely clear right now that I am not a gay pervert. Lots of my very best friends are gay.
He's not a gay pervert.
But the thought of asking for another man's pants is frankly dirty. To this end, I rather hope I've heard the last of one cast member who continually insisted on sending me items of his clothing. So on the one hand, there's nothing perverted about it. On the other, if it's boys, that would make him a gay pervert.
So oh my god, could someone do that with a New Zealand TV show?
The guy is incredibly creepy. If hey, you read
Dylan,
what
you
he writes,
you could sell me knickers for New Zealand soaps.
No.
Doctor Who girlsknickers.co.uk. Check out the gallery and read the way he writes about things. He sounds like he's got some kind of brain structure problem. And he's been dedicated to living out this fantasy for 30 years.
And the site is laid out. There's a gallery where you have the publicity shot a screen cap of a woman. And beside that, a photo of knickers.
Yeah. And he's very clearly, he's written to some of these poor people. Possibly hundreds of times, certainly dozens of times. And he says, when I was finally received a letter in response to my many inquiries, the underpants that arrived had a price tag on them, so I'm not sure if these have ever been worn. So these people, he's harried these poor actors and producers.
To the point of going to the wardrobe department and
begged for some underpants to send him so that he'll just stop.
Oh, I'm looking at this. It's freaking me out.
It's there's nothing like he doesn't show dirty underpants or anything. It's just pictures of very ordinary laundered looking undies. But it's just the whole site is out of its mind.
What is what's unwanted?
It's a list of women's underpants he wants. And he describes one woman as bin liner. Don't know the actress's name. She's a Kang, and I think she's married to Mark Strickson, so maybe he could help. And apparently he's got bin liner.
You think it's a parody?
He's got bin liner now. He would like he would kill for a pair of Delia Derbyshire's underpants.
It's a well-executed parody, surely.
I really hope so.
It's really well done.
I really hope so. I don't know what he does with them. I think he probably gags himself.
But just remember, Dylan, he's not a gay pervert.
No,
of course. Oh my god, this is just amazing.
It is amazing. And so that's what I suggest people just spend a few minutes checking out.
The nooks and crannies.
The internet.
If one of the listeners has enough spare time, I think I'd love to see maybe just New Zealand television girls knickers, perhaps. It might be worth just opening it up there. I'd really like to see that site.
I think you've got to go just knickers though.
Knickers!
Pants. Well, pants. New Zealand TV pants.
But not from men, because that would be a gay perversion.
Undies, I suppose, is the word we'd use. Undies.
Undies. Grats. Jockeys. Don't want to get into the brand names, actually. Okay, well, I think that's just about it for this episode. I am really pleased that you listened again, dear listener.
Thank you. Yeah, so much.
And Ben, it's great that you remembered you do a podcast.
I didn't know.
And thanks for giving me all that warning last time. That was really great.
The only reason I came this time is I couldn't handle more abuse.
and Dylan, it was really good having you on the show again. Even though we didn't really introduce you very sensibly.
No, we need New Zealand podcast knickers.
I will. Okay. Okay. I've got some great undies. I'm very proud of.
I got a few pairs I could get rid of.
And it was great having Ryan on again. He had to dash off earlier.
Probably before
whatever
the pot clanging stuff.
He's probably praying or whatever those people do.
What?
Yeah, whatever.
What is he?
Vegetarian.
Off the rails.
Tune in again next week we will bring more love directly into your ear canal.
Have a lovely week.
You're listening to The Weekly Show on with God.
Sorry, we're using that one.